We're angry because it's like a seed of contention inside of us. It's a way we pray that we don't know we're praying. Okay, but what is God doing? And that's the question we ask all the time. Like, where is God in this? There's a spiritual battle over freedom of speech, because then it creates fear that you're going to lose something if you do speak. God is raising up the voice to be able to tell a different narrative.
In this day and age, the words that we say are under attack. And with me today is Sean Bowles, who is a well-known prophetic voice. And we're going to talk about the things you can't say. So, Sean, welcome to Charisma.
I'm always glad to be here. This is awesome.
Yeah. So, Sean, right now in the news, which is actually something that you do a lot, you comment about what is happening in our world, but you bring a prophetic perspective. You kind of focus in on discernment and help people break down what is really going on spiritually behind the headlines. And one of the things that's really under attack right now is free speech and the things that people say. Help us kind of understand what is going on. And you actually fled California, where the biggest culprit is happening. So tell us about what's been going on with free speech.
Well, the good thing is our ministry is still based in California. We still love California. But yeah, free speech is one of the constitutional rights we have. And it's something that, as a Christian, it's one of the strongest ways that God anoints us or uses us to be able to like spread his love, to be able to connect to people. It's the connecting devices, are the way we talk to each other, the way we spend time with each other. And when you take that issue and you basically sideswipe it or side rail it or put it into a place where it just shouldn't be, and you put rules and regulations on it that we shouldn't have, it takes the power and authority out of, you know, our whole Christian experience. So right now we're dealing with big tech social media networks other than Twitter, that you can't say things about abortion. You can't talk about Christianity in a way that may be progressive in the sense, not progressive Christianity, but progressive in the sense of like saying my ideas that are that there should be a way of us relating our Christianity to influence the world around us. And as soon as you start talking about transformation or influence, you get marginalized. Or if you talk about how it could affect gender identity or any other thing, you're in trouble. You're in trouble with the big tech. You also can't advertise to anybody. You used to be able to advertise and tell people of your local church within 5 miles around you, if they're interested or doing searches about God, you can be one of the places that they search for. But they took all advertisement that's specific to conservatism, politics that are right-leaning, and Christianity or any faith except for extreme faiths. You can still do Islam and you can still do Buddhism and that kind of thing, but you can't do any kind of Christianity or Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons, which we, you know, we understand they think they're similar, but they're not. But you can't do any of that. And so that took a way of us reaching our audience away, because they're shadow banning or they're minimizing where our voice would go. If you say the word transgender once, and your channel that they know is Christian and they know that is conservative, they'll immediately take you out of the algorithm. Like at one time, we had Instagram tell us like, we're only showing you to 1% of your audience right now because you're basically in trouble. You're in our penalty box.
Wait a second. And Instagram told you that?
They put it in the notes. Like, you're only being shown in a small, like up to 1% of your audience because of some things you're talking about. And so we had to earn our way back in by not talking about some of the hot topics there. And that's why you see so many conservatives. It's not that they don't want to be bold on YouTube or Instagram, but they can't say even the word transgender, even in a positive context, any context at all, because of their whole channel, what it's about. They can't say the word abortion. They can't say the word pornography. You can't talk badly about pornography. You can't say human trafficking. If you talk about human trafficking and pornography and it's linked together, you're immediately, that will be banned or it will be marginalized in their algorithm. And so these systems are built by a humanistic mindset that doesn't really have God in the equation, and it doesn't really have people in real spiritual social justice in the equation. So we're watching people who are getting raised up to speak in culture. And then that, of course, if it's in the algorithm, it's in a whole people group who are specifically all over the world, but in America, who are trying to silence those voices on mainstream media. It's in the local town hall, in, you know, when you go to school boards, you get the same algorithm in those places. It's amongst humans. And so I feel like we have a lot at stake right now with freedom of speech, because we have to be bold, but then you're afraid that if you're too bold, you're going to lose your voice. You're going to lose your authority at your school board. You're going to be looked at a certain way. And it's just a wild battle.
Well, we have already said a bunch of different words that as we're putting this up on YouTube or social medias, they're probably going to to limit some of this. So I just want to encourage people that if you're watching this and you've made it this far in the video, let us know in the comments that you have seen this for yourselves and you are experiencing this, or the fact that you agree with what we're talking about. Just let us know, and then hopefully that will kind of override the censorship there. But, you know, because we've just addressed it. We haven't actually said whether we're for or against any of that stuff, but really free speech is an important thing, because I know that Jesus's great command for us was to go into all the world and to make disciples. And we need to use our words to be able to do that. And one of the things that I always find really interesting as you're reading through the Acts of the Apostles, is that Paul was a Roman citizen, and he had rights that were different than the other apostles. And so he actually used the rights that he had effectively to be able to take the gospel further. And I feel like oftentimes we don't understand the rights that we do have, and therefore we're just abdicating that voice to somebody else. I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Oh, I love that, because I use that example a lot, because Paul used until the day he died. And he understood his rights. And I think as an American, I've gone all over the world, and I've gone to war zones and places that you have a natural entitlement when you're American to be able to get certain rights, to be able to give food away, or to be able to get into certain IDP camps or whatever else. It's amazing when you understand that your rights of whatever you have, whether it's from the industry you work in or whether it's from whatever, and how you can use that for the kingdom. I think Christians, what we don't understand is how much love is a currency, and how much love is a power that people are looking for, because love resolves so much. Love helps so much. It does so many things. And I feel like speech, along with love, because faith comes by hearing, speech is so important. So when you're looking at like what the homosexual community is on, I know we're probably going to be marginalized for this again, but they were feeling underserved and they were feeling marginalized. And so they went after a media and entertainment kind of collaborative through the arts. And they said, let's tell our stories. And let's get a homosexual on every single show, or somebody LGBTQ plus on every show. And just as a sub character in the background, just so that it feels familiar. And then let's start telling their stories, so people get a sense of empathy and compassion and they can relate to them. Well, the problem with that is that they only told very happy ending stories for all this time till now. It's like, this is great, this is grand, this is wonderful. You know, Christians owe the world to tell the stories. The Christians who've come out of that community, the Christians who've come alongside that community, who've had kids in that community, have the obligation out of love to show what Jesus did in the midst of those stories when there's a turnaround. And if Christians would, it's the same thing about, again, we're using when women have the right to choose, when they go through that entire experience, Juno did a really good job. We rarely show the story up until like the actual woman who's having this experience. And when you tell that story, the thousands of testimonies of what God did through media, through the arts, through television, through film, through podcasting, through music, then all of a sudden you create a narrative that's more powerful than the news media. It's more powerful than the anti, it's more powerful than the protests, but we have not used these vehicles enough. And I feel like God, one of the things that with freedom of speech is that God's deploying people to be a great voice. And there's this big war against it on the front end. Spiritually, I feel like there's a spiritual battle over freedom of speech, because then it creates fear that you're going to lose something if you do speak. But man, if these people, I've watched on TikTok, there's a couple of people who've come, who've detransitioned, and they're telling their stories, and them telling their stories is worth 1,000 sermons on it. It's like they tell their stories of, this is what happened to me as a teenager. This is how it changed. This is what Jesus did in my life. And it's a before and after. You now have them as the measure or the weight of how you look at the issue. Just like when you watch certain TV shows and movies and you really don't understand certain issues, and you watch it and you go, oh, I have sympathy for that now. But it's not a right reality-based sympathy. And so I think like part of the freedom of speech issue is that we are being raised up to tell our stories on the biggest town hall stages in the world. And the enemy is trying to resist us before we can get there. And that's why Christian films have been in the box office for the last 24 months. I think we're at 17 months now. We've been in the top 5 films in the box office on the weekends that they come out. So every month there's been one Christian film. That's never happened in history, John. I mean, that's never happened. And it's because God is raising up the voice to be able to tell a different narrative. Even that Chosen, how it's showing a different version, an artistic representation of what it could have been like in the Gospels. And it's the most watched show on television. I mean, it's like by far, and 50% of the people who watch it aren't Christians. Mm-hmm. That's huge. But there's a whole group of people who would like to get that off television. There's people who, when Amazon was internally, when Amazon was trying to bring it on, that were trying to say it doesn't have DEI, it doesn't have enough, you know, doesn't have enough representation in it. And we don't want that on our streaming service this way. We don't want to partner to them in any direct way because we don't have that. We don't have enough representation. There's no queer or LGBTQ plus people in it. And it's like, but that's not even faithful to the story. We're telling artistic representation of a real story. And that created a new dialogue in Amazon that actually created a new way for them to make films without DEI. Mm. It was the first time because of The Chosen, and they weren't even a direct show. So we have to be a voice, and God's raising up people to do things differently. And it is scary because the whole world's saying, you can't win an Oscar if you don't have this. And then someone's going to, you know, make a movie or a project that will be different. And it will win an Oscar, and it's going to confuse everybody.
Yeah. You know, Sean, you brought up a couple of things that I kind of want to go a little bit deeper in our discussion about this, because you've brought up about TikTok, and we've talked about podcasts, and we've talked about all different types of media as well. But the concept of sound bites versus long form discourse is something that I'm paying a lot of attention to right now. And we're in a political season, and I'm noticing that one candidate won't even talk, and another candidate is going on long form podcasts and willing to just talk and really get things out there. I'm starting to see that there is more growth and development with long form content because people want that real. They want the reality. They don't want just a TikTok thing. They want to go deeper. Can we talk about going deeper versus the headlines or the quick quotes and the gotcha phrases? What are you sensing about that?
Well, I think we're in a generation that for a long time substituted information for connection. And so if I know it, then I feel connected to it and that's enough. But now they're wanting real connection to the heart of something. So you have Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson, and these guys who have the biggest podcast in the world, the conservatives. And so Joe, we're going to have a 3-hour conversation with somebody. And when they hear the person, whether it's about aliens or someone's faith, he's had a lot of people of faith on in the last couple of years. He's had a lot of conservatives on the last couple of years. And you get to hear, as somebody who comes from a different mindset, I mean, I've listened to a couple of the alien guys where I'm like, that's intriguing. I've never thought of that. I've never heard that. Now I have to think about that. It's in me because I actually like this person I'm listening to. I feel connection to Joe Rogan and this person's conversation. It's touched me somewhere on the inside, in my heart, in my soul. So now I'm thinking about aliens differently because this person was in the CIA and they declassified this and whatever. So I think like there's this long form piece that builds connection and where the world is no longer hungry to just be informed, but they want to be included. They want to be connected. They want to be part of the conversation. So I think these long form, especially young men, I think men are so hungry for, they're getting out of the mode of like, I can check off my list all the things I need to know about. Like, here's the boxes I need about aliens. I need about God. I need about, you know, whatever. It's politics. And as long as I hear about it, I feel good. I feel strong. I don't think men are in the same condition they were before. I think they're like, I want to hear a father. I want to hear a brother. I want to feel connected. Mm. And I think that podcast, obviously, the men are a higher demographic than women for the first time in history on a media server. And it's because of that. Whereas Fox News or CNN News is cyclical news. And it's just information with a lot of rhetoric. And I'm not saying there's no good Fox News because there is, and there's no good CNN News because there is. But as far as maybe not in this news cycle, there's not, but there is at times. But it really is just informative, and it's not including you at all. It's just telling you what you need to believe. And I think people are done with that.
Yeah. People don't want to be told what to believe because that's what they've been told their whole lives. They really, I mean, I kind of always go back to this. I was taught how to think, not just what to think. Yeah. And if I was told what to think, I was given the reasons why we came to that conclusion. And that helped me in my formative years. But for so long, people have just taken what has been said and they haven't been Bereans and they haven't dug in deeper and they haven't done that. Well, let's talk about some discernment. And you do a lot of work commenting about our news, society, the culture at large, media, but from a prophetic angle, from a prophetic perspective and a discernment. Tell me about your call in that arena.
Well, I'm still figuring it out. A couple of years ago, I felt like I knew I was supposed to work in media and entertainment more as a bigger focus than what I was doing in ministry. And so I literally during coronavirus left the pulpit type ministry And I felt like God, you know, was a kind of a prophetic act, because I felt God was deploying a lot of people from church-centric ministry to mainstream industries, whether it's business or media or whatever, politics. So when I moved into it, Matt Crouch was like, I need you to come on alongside TBN. I want you to come once a month and do commentary, be on some of our news shows, you know, and then your YouTube channel. Why don't you go after news commentary for a while and then we'll do a show. He wanted me to do a broadcast show right away, but I wasn't ready for it, because I was like, I don't even know how to. I always do this. Even in my church sermons, a lot of times I would start out with like, well, here's what's going on in society. And we would talk about it. And then I would get into a message. So it's very normal for me. Like in my strengths finders, input's my number one, you know, so it's very normal for me to give input. And I think that God, a lot of news commentators, I think they have a discerning edge where they're looking at culture through a certain lens that causes them to be a contributor to the conversation. And the other thing that they're doing is they're raising up and creating conversations that no one else is having. And so when I looked at that, I was like, we'd already had Exploring the Prophetic podcast here on Charisma Podcast Network, which we also turned into Charisma or Exploring the Marketplace. And having a conversation with a business person who's sharing their breakdowns and their breakthroughs and their highs and their lows was like, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, I mean, their life stories with 1,000 sermons. So when I transitioned into like the Sean Bowles show, we called it, the first week we were like in the top 10 of all news, and then the top one or two in news commentary in the world. And I'm like, what? I mean, I just started, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, this is weird. And we've stayed in the top 150, usually in the top 40 the day it comes out, every week. And we stay in the top 100 to 150 all week long, even if we only have one episode, which most shows need daily content to stay there.
Right.
And we've had like, you know, now we have a little bit more, but I was just like, wow, people are this hungry to have somebody who doesn't point out the wrong. Like, one of the things we do on our show is that we don't focus on the enemy and we don't focus on what man's doing wrong. And we don't do church controversy, because I feel like a lot of church controversy needs to be handled apostolically or by pastors and leaders and accountability. And it doesn't need to go through like a public scrutiny, the same way that somebody in politics, we can talk about them with integrity, or we can talk about something in entertainment, because there's no process for restoration. There's no process for healing. There's no process that society can bring around them, you know, versus a pastor who fails. It's not something that I feel called to talk about. So I began to, you know, look at what's happening in entertainment, look at what's happening with freedom of speech, look at what's happening. Elon Musk was a big story for us when he started to buy Twitter and move into that direction. And people were like, oh my gosh, someone's saying that there's something redemptive about this. I'm going to hear what he says. And I'm saying, I think this is God. God's using this man as a Cyrus. Like, we need a freedom of speech vehicle. I can say whatever I want on Twitter. For the first time in years, we're not going to be silenced. You know, like, this is crazy. And a whole audience was like, oh my God, that's how I feel. I feel like I need to, you know, not be disabled in my voice right now. So some of the things that we talked about with even like Jesus Revolution coming out at the same time as Asbury Revival, and how it was a sign of the times of what God's preparing the world for is another worldwide revival. And you have these incredible vehicles, like where Kelsey Grammer comes back to Lord doing a film. And then you have the Asbury Revival, which breaks out with, there's no major celebrity leader doing it. And that was going to be a sign of what's to come. And then, you know, even over the summer, having the most baptisms there's ever been anywhere. And it all happened in the state of California, which a lot of Christians have discounted or said or thrown to the enemy already because of Gavin Newsom, who's just a man. I mean, God has a destiny in that state. So I feel like I've been able to come in and help people look at things maybe that they're angry at. Because a lot of times we're angry because it's like a seed of contention inside of us. It's a way we pray that we don't know we're praying. We get frustrated at something until we get a redemptive lens for it. And I've had that happen so many times in my life where I'm just like, I'm aggravated in my soul over something or someone. And then as I'm aggravated, for me, John, I was aggravated at like a young Christian celebrity who became a Christian back when I first started church in LA. And I was just aggravated because he kept dating all the girls in my church, and he was a womanizer, and he had all these issues, and I just didn't like him. And then all of a sudden he came to my church, and he's like, I need mentoring. I need help. And he's like this, you know, worldwide celebrity, you know? And I'm like, you know, I don't want to. And then I fell in love with the kid, and like, it totally mentored him and like spent time with him. I was like, okay, you're actually an amazing young man, but you just need some dad time. You just need some fathering and stuff. So it's like a lot of the things that we're aggravated by in society, it's like God's going to give us authority if we can make it through and see what he's doing and not stay where the enemy's at in it, or where humanity's failure is at. So I feel like the show's been a redemptive tool to help people, even if they don't agree with my biases, to help people to go, okay, but what is God doing? And that's the question we ask all the time. Like, where is God in this? Like, behind the scenes, my team's like, okay, this is a lot to look at, but I'm not hearing where God's at yet. We haven't gotten there yet. We're not going to talk about this yet. We're not just going to be responsive because we want to make a response to get clicks. We have to have authority in what we're talking about, or it's not worth talking about it. And it's been really profound.
You know, Sean, you said something that I just wrote down, this phrase, the redemptive lens, and how you you were frustrated until you had a redemptive lens for that. There's just something in my spirit that just caught on fire whenever you said that. How do we help people use that redemptive lens and use that frustration to get them to a place where they can see through that redemptive lens? Because I think that's a missing element in our society right now.
Well, I mean, the Bible is so filled with it, right? Whatever's pure, whatever's right, whatever's noble, fix your mind and affections on those things. So whatever you're seeing hell, don't focus on hell. What is God doing in the midst of hell? Like Jesus, if he was in the garden and all he looked at was Satan the whole time in the temptation, he would have failed. But he saw the Father. He knew the Father. He remembered the Father. We tell our kids when they go to school, when you miss us, because they're little, they're 9 and 11, when you miss us, carry the affection of this moment. Like I'm hugging you, sitting with you on the couch, loving on you. Just remember that, rehearse that in your heart. That's your life. That's your reality. Even if you don't feel it at school, you can practice this. You can practice this being together. And I feel like for Christians, we have to not look at hell. We have to look at heaven in the midst of hell. We have to look at God in the midst of hell. And so we have to ask ourselves in the midst of, transgender, homosexual, LGBTQ plus, which I shouldn't say again, this is my fourth time saying it on the show, but issues. One of the greatest redemptive words we've ever had was from the Latter Rain Prophet, the movie Jesus Revolution was made off of, Lonnie Frisbee, Jesus Revolution prophet, who said in his deathbed what hippies were to the Jesus people movement, the LGBTQ plus people will be to the next great move of God. You misunderstand them, you don't know how to have authority or connection to them, but God is going to use them. And so I look at it and go, my daughters were in a gym, a transgender came in the women's locker room, why they're taking a shower, when in the shower, they're closed showers, but next to them. And my wife got him out of there and we're like in Texas. And we're like, this is bizarre. Like this, we're in a part of Texas that's very conservative. And we're just frustrated. Just going, of course we try and turn on compassion, Lord, heal this man and whatever. But then there's this other part of it that's like, you're going to raise up some people that are so confused right now. And they're going to be the voice of the next great revolution, like Paul. And they're going to be like, a lot of people won't want to accept him because you're going to have to raise up Barnabas as God. But you just got to practice, not just, oh, I guess I'll think the best thing, and that could be the antidote for the worst thing. It's not that. It's what is God saying and doing historically? And how is he moving us towards Jesus returning? And how do we start to have faith that in the midst of a world of confusion, he has a sound mind and we can have a sound mind? And that's where I look at it. And I don't stay in discouragement because there's so much to be encouraged in. And if you're not encouraged, that means you're not looking at God. You're looking at everything else.
That's so good, Sean. That is so good. And you said earlier, before we hit record, that when all hell is breaking loose, all heaven is breaking loose too.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about that a little bit more, because I feel like you are scratching the surface on hope right now. And that there's this glimmer of hope that's coming out of this conversation for everybody that's watching that. If you're feeling hope, put hope in the comments and let us know how God is using this conversation to help you see things differently and have that redemptive lens. Put that in the comments. Would love to hear about that. But Sean, how do we cultivate this hope even more when all hell is breaking loose, all heaven is breaking loose?
Well, if I was in discipleship mode, I'd say just practically, you wake up in the day and something hard happens, and then you use that to remind yourself of God. That's why we have to strengthen ourselves in the word too. We have to have scriptures. Like when you live in the land of hope, you're never disappointed, but you have to remember the first part of James 1, consider pure joy whenever you face trials and tribulations of any kind, for it develops perseverance, and perseverance develops character, and character develops hope when you live in the land of hope. So a lot of times people just want hope, but they don't realize that it comes from trials and it comes from persevering through hardship. So when we wake up and when we're facing our own battles and we're facing our own demons, so to speak, are we strengthening ourselves in God? Are we looking for what he's doing in our own life? And can we come to agreement, even if it's the simplest thing of like, man, I want to live today. Man, I like my family. And just grounding yourself in that hope of that and the goodness of that. And most people aren't grounding themselves in the goodness of God. So I hear a lot of prophets who are saying, if Trump doesn't get elected, America's going to fail forever. It's never going to be able to turn around. And they're putting their hope in Republican government being the answer for a God equation that is bigger than the Republicans aren't bigger than the God equation over America. I don't want Kamala to win. I don't want the progressive liberalism to win right now. But we've just had it win, and it hasn't destroyed America. It's made it hard, but we're still the greatest country on the earth right now. Like still, and I could give you 25 reasons why. And so it's when people make those extreme statements and they're living out of that extremity of like, I need this to solve this. I need that. And they're not living with like, today's a good day. Today, this is what God's doing in my life. Today, this is what God's doing in my family. Today, this is what God's doing in my church. Today, this is what, if you don't live out of that place of seeing who God is and what he's doing, you won't look for him to multiply that. You'll look for him to answer all the deficits. So you live in a victim mentality. And I think for me, what we've been doing with our show is like showing like in the midst of, you know, Kanye West, I hate his turnaround. I hate that he doesn't believe in Jesus and he believes he's God now. And I still have hope for him. But somehow, like a lot of Christians will say, well, see, you were wrong about Kanye. And then I'm not wrong about Kanye. He gave his life to Jesus legitimately behind the scenes, tried to walk with him and mental illness and Satan won, you know, like, but that doesn't discount what God's doing in Hollywood with others like, you know, people like Chris Pratt or Mark Wahlberg or whoever, you know, there's so many of them. It doesn't discount what's happening with Kevin Sorbo or whoever. And we could say, you know, well, Kanye and be so focused on it that we don't see Mark Wahlberg. We can be so focused on what's not happening that we can't see what is happening. And it really is that parable that Jesus said, those who have not, everything will be taken away. Those who have, everything will be given. It starts with your mind and your lens. If you feel like everything's going to hell, then you're looking for hell to take more. If you feel like God's on the move and he's actually here with us, you're looking for him to add to that.
Yeah. And if we take a step back, and you just said something that was really powerful, that we are currently, this is 2024 in September as we're recording this, for anybody that's watching this years down the road, but we are currently under the administration of President Joe Biden, who is not who's left-leaning, and the country is going through hardships, but it hasn't fallen apart yet. But you just also mentioned the Asbury revival. We've started seeing moves of God that are coming out of this hardship, that if we take a step back, we can actually see those things. But if we're so myopic and only paying attention to what's right in front of our faces, we won't see any of those things there. From a prophetic standpoint, though, what are you feeling right now? What are you seeing heading into this election cycle? I know you said earlier that God hasn't spoken to you about the winner of the outcome of that, but just prophetically, what are you seeing and sensing in the news right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing that the battleground is actually helping people to define what they want, because things are so contrasted right now. People are looking at, under Joe Biden, we've had religious intolerance. I mean, Christians have been put in jail for being Christians who are advocating for rights that we should all be able to advocate for. The Supreme Court is being threatened with a filibuster where they're trying to, you know, stack the Supreme Court because they don't like a conservative Supreme Court. So you're watching people who want to change the laws to violate our rights that are in office right now. And you're watching it in a number of different ways. I feel like whether Kamala wins or Trump wins, we're going to start to have an emerging generation who's fighting for rights again. And we won't be the passivity. There's no time to be passive anymore. The passivity is we're seeing champions being raised up, and like whether it's the Charlie Kirks and kind of social commentary, or whether it's actual politicians. There's so many politicians who God's raising up right now, locally on a local level, and then also on a national level. There's so many pastors, right? It's the most pastors who've ever run for offices in America is in the last 4 years. I mean, that just shows you that there's in all kinds of offices. It shows you that the passivity is kind of ending. And in the midst of that, too, you have this undercurrent of movement, like the stories that will come out for colleges of how they're going to liberalize your children. Well, some of the colleges are having the biggest moves of God they've ever had on their campus. You know, and like there's football teams baptizing kids that, you know, I think you just covered that story the other day. There's, you know, it's just crazy how many baptisms are happening and how much of the move of God is happening on local public colleges, Oklahoma University and Auburn University. Different colleges are having things happen that have never happened before. So I look at it and go, we're coming to an election cycle, and the elections don't determine how much or how little God will move at all. They do determine how much freedom we'll have within the move, but they don't determine the move of God itself. And I think that, you know, just like, right, I think the Jesus People Revolution was a signpost. And that movie coming out was a signpost of what's to come, because government was breaking down. There was the war over Vietnam internally, almost like a civil war. there was people who were so sick of not being real at home that they became hippies because they felt like everyone's trying to be like June Cleaver. And for those of you who are old enough to know that, the Cleaver family, they were trying to, it was like, there was no vulnerability in families. People were experiencing horrendous things at home and they had no process of therapy or counseling or biblical discipleship to help them over it. And so people were like, home's not real. I'm leaving home. And the most hippies were abused people who left home because home wasn't good. And the next move of God is going to make home real good. Family and marriage is going to be on display. People are going to look at how people are doing family, mom and dad, kids at home. And I feel like we're about to come into a cycle of, and a season where so many people are going to get saved based on the fact the felt needs are so felt and that they're so obvious, just like it was in the Jesus Revolution time or Jesus People Movement time. And I'm encouraged by the obviousness of it, the obvious gaps that are there, because only God can fill some of the gaps that are there. There's no politician, Trump or other or Kamala, who could fill these gaps in America or elsewhere, but over Israel, over what's happening in the Middle East, over what's happening anywhere. But God can. And I think he's going to save us again. He's going to save us again.
Sean, I've really enjoyed talking with you because hope is rising up within me. And I know hope is rising up within everybody that's watching this. If you're feeling that things are dark and depressive and, you know, there's no hope, I pray that this conversation has made you feel hope. And Sean, as we're wrapping up here, would you just pray for everybody that's been watching that they would have that encounter with the Lord?
For sure. And yeah, it's my privilege. It's my privilege to be on Charisma Podcast Network with the Sean Bowles Show and just be with you guys and with Exploring the Marketplace. I think it's so fun to know that people can follow this conversation. Maybe they got awakened to something. We keep having this conversation every week. You can come with us. But Holy Spirit, for everyone watching, thank you for John and the Charisma team and what they're bringing, how they're standing in a gap that's so obvious right now. And I pray everyone watching, I speak over your faith and your hope, and even maybe your fatigue to the point of exhaustion from all the drama and the trauma around the world. The Bible is very clear. Jesus himself says, cast your cares upon me. And I pray you'd be able to cast those cares on him and let him carry you through this season. Let him carry the issues that you don't know how to resolve in your heart, whether it's Israel or national politics, or whether it's something very real locally in your marriage or your family, that God would allow you to just walk with him in a way where he would carry the heaviness and he would carry the heavy burden. And I pray that God would give you resolutions and resolution points when it comes to some of the heaviness you experience. He is a spirit who lives inside of you, and he will speak to you, and he'll bring your life and make it more than it could ever be without him. And I pray that you would feel hope today that's not just in messaging, but hope based on the spiritual rootedness of what he's doing in your heart right now. And I pray that he would bring more alive the word, and through his spirit, the word and just the promise that's over your life. As we've been having this conversation, that you would feel the promise of what's to come, that your life has a John 10:10, like God's abundance, his goodness is promised to you if you'll just look for it. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Sean Bowles, thank you so much for joining us today on Charisma.
Oh, thanks for having me.